Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 759. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. I am joined today by a great friend of the show. It's always fun to have him on the show. He is a foremost expert on both fitness and pop culture. Of course, the fitness, you can find the original brand that really got things going years ago, Fitness Made Simple, at fitnessmadesimple.com. where John now has excellent plans available for you to help get into better shape. Of course, there's also johnbaystyle.net. You can check that out. That is a hub for everything that he's got going on both sides, fitness and pop culture. You can also find him on Twitter, at johnbaystyle. And a pleasure to have back to the show. You've probably deduced by now our friend, the great John Baystyle. Welcome back to the show, my man. How are you today?
Thrilled to be back, Rick. Always love talking Emmys and all sorts of fun stuff with you on FDH Lounge, one of my favorite shows.
Thank you so much. And I got to say, one thing I was bummed about as I was doing the math in my head as to what mini episode this was going to be, I thought this was going to be 760, not 759. 760 has a special place in my heart because it is the highest three-game series I'd ever bowled. So it would have been great to do such a monumental number in my own mind with you. But alas, it's 759. It's a pleasure to have you on nevertheless, my man.
Well, that is exciting that I almost was the number that is indicative of your highest three-game bowling score.
Well, you'd have to grow up in Cleveland, Ohio to know how big that is. It's a big bowling town, John, but, you know.
I enjoy the bowling.
Yes. Yes, bowling's a lot of fun. I have fallen out of practice in recent years, but love it to death. Still aspire to do something in it at some level. But regardless, as far as success at any level, how's that for a segue? The Emmys are pretty much the peak of it if you are in television. And we've had you on previously to review some red carpet stuff and general sort of pop culture notes around a big event and why should the Emmys be any different. So I had a couple of notes from my red carpet review, which was after the fact. Again, I'm not going to lie, I was watching World Cup of Hockey as it was happening last night, but I did my homework, John. I caught up after the fact. I didn't catch a whole lot in the way of monumental things here. I have a few notes. What were your sort of headlights from the red carpet?
Okay, so we're starting with the red carpet. Nothing. I mean, I, whenever we talk about the red carpet at the VMAs and the craziness, and even sometimes at the Grammys, there's more spectacularly good, spectacularly bad. It's more polarizing. I mean, in this one, I mean, Priyanka Chopra in the red. I mean, she's a beautiful woman, and she looked like a goddess in that. Probably my favorite one was Emily. Actually, I don't even know exactly what show she's on or if she was nominated or anything, but Emily Ratajkowski was in like a cobalt blue dress, and she just looked hot as can be. I mean the design was what it was, but the color and the cut and the way it fit her and everything was amazing.
Those two were showing up on a lot of the best dress lists.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say was the theme for the night was let's dress like Emmy and all be gold and yellow. There's a lot of gold and yellow that was running around. I want to get an Emmy. I'm going to basically attract that Emmy in my gold and yellow dress. So you had a ton of them wearing, you know, gold or yellow or some variation on that theme. I mean, you had Laverne Cox. Oh, Laverne Cox looked really good in her dress. Taraji, who is my favorite in like anything. So, I mean, she could wear a paper bag and I just love her character and I love her personality and her drive. Taraji looked awesome. I think Minnie Driver was also in yellow, Ellie Kemper. So there were a lot of them. And then, Kristen Bell, who has that new show coming out, was in like a long flowy dress and she looked really nice. But I would say the two standouts, the ones that caught my eyes the most would have been, Emily and Priyanka.
Yeah, those were ones that were gaining a lot of critical acclaim for the way that they dressed. And again, you know me, whenever I'm doing this, I tend more to gravitate towards, I don't want to say necessarily the freak show elements, but sort of that side of
Yay!
The spectrum. And there was nothing here that really was anywhere close to. I remember our recap from, I think it was the Oscars. I remember talking about Ashley Graham, that plus-size model who was dressed like a stuffed sausage, as that one Australian newspaper said. So there was no real dumpster fires last night, it seemed like. There were a couple things that I thought were funny, but I didn't see anything that far, you know, over the top. The one thing that was really kind of interesting, Sarah Hyland, who I'm told is on Modern Family, was wearing some kind of combo pair up of capris and a gown. Did you happen to feast your eyes on that?
Oh, yeah. No, she's often talked about on E! And stuff like that. So I was flipping back and forth in preparation for your show and the other shows that have me on for the Emmys. So I saw her. And she is always touted on E! As a fashion one to watch and stuff like that. And it was interesting. I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. It was cool. It was sort of like, like the Flood's Over pants. I guess for women, they're called capris. I don't know. It's the ones that end like way above the ankle, like, you know, in case there was a flood so you wouldn't get your pants wet. And then a gowny top, but it got a lot of people talking. She's making news. I saw her in some articles today and she was on E! A bunch yesterday. So good for her. That's awesome.
And of course, capris, that's the term you want to use to bust your friend's balls whenever you see them wearing floods. Yeah. You know, oh, nice capris there, Jeff. It really worked well on you, but so there was that. I don't want to say a story of two Sarahs, but somebody else that was kind of popping out at me here. Sarah Paulson, if I'm playing word association, I'm thinking leprechaun with cleavage. That was all I could come up with for her. That was an interesting green outfit.
Damn, that would have been my tweet. There you go. Shoot. If you'd only told me that last night.
I'm sorry, man. I'll try to be a little more immediate on this stuff.
I would have been nice. I liked her speech very much with her and Marcia Clark, and I like the fact that she brought Marcia Clark as her plus one. I would have said she dressed green for the money and got the award.
That's right. That's right. This is a pretty good point in her career, and that really kind of caps it off with getting the Emmy for that. And it's really one of these kind of interesting things here when you look at how anthologies are getting to be bigger on TV. I've been a big fan of the two seasons of Fargo, caught the first season of True Detective and really loved it. What they did with the O.J. Simpson miniseries that was on Fox last winter here, FX rather, is it sort of, you know, allows us to look at this major pop culture thing and really kind of redefine it, doesn't it? Because, again, you talked about that with Marcia Clark and the way that she got hammered on at the time for everything from her fashion choices to her court strategy and all of which at the time were deemed to be pretty much Hindenburg-like. You look back through the eyes of time, and as Sarah Paulson was saying, history seems to be a little bit kinder to her than we all were in 1994.
First of all, I applaud Sarah Paulson for saying that in the speech, and I applaud her for also taking Marcia as the plus one. Marcia, by the way, is like a fine wine. She gets better looking with age. She looked better at the Emmys when I saw her last night, years after the OJ thing, than she ever looked before. But I think that that's true about anything. I mean, nowadays, especially with social media, and it was around to some degree, not to the degree it is now, during the OJ trial and all that stuff. People go for the negative first. They go for the negative first. And what do we always talk about? The media, and this is also people in general now, because people consider themselves part of the media when they're on Twitter and when they're on Facebook. They consider themselves would-be reporters. They love to hail you, and they love to nail you. So when she first came out with that, the hairdo and the no makeup and stuff like that, and she didn't realize she was going to be scrutinized to this level, they butchered her. But now all of a sudden, since they've already done the butchering, it's time to hail. And it's just a cycle that everybody goes through. I mean, look back in the day. I mean, back in the day, Mel Gibson, I think there was an article, The Ultimate Piece of Beef and The Ultimate Movie Star, and he was, like, lauded as a big sex symbol. Now you see headlines in different papers about him being an anti-Semitic nutcase. And this is what the media changes. Time is the great equalizer. No matter how great you are at one point in time, it will change, guaranteed. So don't get too envious of the people who are on a high right now. because they will be shot down eventually. Look at Bill Cosby, another example. Point said.
That's right. That's right. And I wonder to what extent this plays in as well. And ironic that I say this, so when the juice is about to be on the loose again in 2017, it looks like he's going to get paroled. But, you know, he walked around several more years after the verdict, but then he has spent the last several years in jail. And whatever you think of the case that happened there, there does seem to be at least a sense of rough justice that, hey, at least he's in jail for something and has been for a number of years now. So I wonder if that's what makes it a little bit easier for us to look past whatever might have been the miscues at the time, the strategic ones in court. Eventually, through unfortunately a different case subsequently years later, he did end up behind bars. So isn't there sort of a sense that it all played out like it was supposed to, at least for a period of time anyways?
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's behind bars for something totally unrelated to
yes.
You know, the murder of somebody, which would be much more serious.
Exactly.
Right. You know, I think a lot of times, I mean, I don't know I've never met the guy. I don't know his situation personally, but I think a lot of times if you get away with something like that, I couldn't even imagine somebody getting away with murder and things like that. If you get away with that, that makes you almost feel like you're Teflon. And I think you push the envelope in other areas and then since everybody was looking to catch him for something else, when you push the envelope in other areas, they're going to try to drop the book on you as hard as they possibly can when they finally catch you even jaywalking. And that's why,
right.
You know, if you ever got away with some ridiculous crime, I mean, not even in his case, but anything, you know, just watch your P's and Q's and stuff like that, because, you know, people are going to be on the lookout just to nail you.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and this is one of the things that makes me feel old. But I mean, there's people running around now that don't have as much of a memory of the case itself. And all they know is that OJ's in jail. So I wonder to what degree, like I said, that might factor in as far as the Marsha Clark nostalgia goes. That, again, at least he's in jail for something, even if it's not what it should be for. It looks like the legal system has run out of ways to keep him in past next year. So we'll see if this Marsha Clark nostalgia kind of fades at that point or not. But the only other thing I noticed from the red carpet that I thought was that noteworthy, and I know this is something that would have caught mm-hmm. your attention because she was ending up on a lot of the lists for being interesting, if not best. And I think best dressed, probably, she was on a number of lists. Kerry Washington,
mm-hmm.
of course, with the pregnancy gown that
yes.
she had there, mm-hmm. and the way that it seemed rather tenuously connected, shall we say, top to
yep.
To bottom on that, and giving you the sense that at any point in time, you know, if anybody held a little snifter of pepper under her nose, one good sneeze and they could be having to run the censored bar over her rack on live TV. That's the kind of sense you got from this thing here. So, you know, what did you think of her particular outfit?
Well, your description right there makes her one to watch. So obviously she made a very, very smart choice. But the thing that blew me away most about her dress was, especially when she was presenting, when she was straight on, I completely forgot that she was pregnant. I mean, she mm-hmm. is carrying all baby, all in the front, because when she was straight on, I forgot that she was pregnant. And then of course you saw when she's presenting, she turned to the side when she made, she had made a comment, and then turned to the side to reveal her pregnancy. And, you know, and it looked like, you know, she could be ready to pop at any moment. And that was,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a jaw dropping moment. That was one of my, most interesting moments of the Emmys that most people didn't catch, because I'm looking at her from the front. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And then when she turns to the side and she's so visibly pregnant, I'm like, that is, there you go.
You know what would have been funny is if she would have been like completely out of view from like the end of the season. Let's say she got done filming, she went into seclusion, she came in there in a side door, and then she comes up on stage, and everybody's like, oh, there's Kerry Washington. And then she turns around and shows it.
Yes.
That would have been a moment, John.
Well, for me, it was almost like that, because I said I don't really watch Scandal on a regular basis, and I don't follow Kerry Washington news that much. I mean, I think, you know, she's great,
mm-hmm.
and what I read about her, she's great, but it's just not one of the shows I follow. So the thing is, I mean, it did affect exactly how you just described it, was the shock that I felt
mm-hmm.
when I saw the turn. And then I remembered back
okay.
in my head, I said, oh, yeah, I remember something in the news about her being pregnant. But it only came to me after she turned. It wasn't like I'm looking at her saying, where's the bump? Where's the bump? Where's the bump? It only came to me afterwards.
Well, and again, it's a tribute to how very, very good she looks, which is an understatement, of course.
Awesome.
That again, you know, how many, I don't know what she's at, 8 months, let's just say, plus or minus, somewhere probably in that ballpark, and look as good as she does. So, you know, a tribute to her most definitely. A note that I came up with, quite frankly, from your Twitter, which I found to be hilarious, you took note of a boo-boo that the Academy made last night. Some poor young fellow who might be working for the Academy Twitter probably got canned after this event here. As the Academy appears to go to the they all look alike card here, mistaking Cuba Gooding Jr. for Terrence Howard, which, as you pointed out, a cardinal sin, particularly in today's climate here. You can't be doing that kind of thing and expect to get away with it, no matter how innocuous intending the mistake is.
Yeah, that was well, that tweet was quickly deleted. I had to go searching for it from when I saw it coming up
because
I was keeping. Yeah, because it was funny. I've been following the Twitter reaction between political tweets that I do and, you know, occasionally, and then just basically just comedic little things. And then the Emmy show stuff, I was just judging responses and following the hashtags and stuff like that. And I'm looking at that one. I'm like, oh, my God, that's not right. I'm like, you got it. I said, is that a joke? And then I'm like, then I looked and I'm like, it's a verified account. Hold on. And I'm like, oh, my God, somebody's going to get fired for that. And then when I look back, it was gone.
Well, again, just going to show in this day and age, deleting something doesn't mean you never put it up in the first place.
Once you put something on the internet, it's never deleted. Don't ever think that.
Exactly.
Yeah, unless, of course, you do nothing, say nothing, and are nothing, and nobody cares about what you're doing, then maybe you have a slight chance. But if you're in the public eye at all, anything you do – I mean, I think that's why I think a lot of celebrities like even young Hollywood, like Justin Bieber and the Jenners and stuff like that, you'll notice on their Instagrams, they'll put something up and then delete it a little bit later. And what that does is, number one, they get publicity for putting it up, whatever they're putting up. And number two, they get publicity for taking it down, because why did they take it down? Why did he take it down? Why did she take it down? What's wrong with that? Ooh, he deleted it. Must be something to hide. So it's two stories, two for the price of one.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, on just a strictly personal note here, among the people you mentioned there, of course, being the Jenners, that's something that really kind of darkens the doorsteps of my thoughts these days here. As I am presently rocking my LeBron jersey doing this show here with you, comes the news that Tristan Thompson, now Khloe Kardashian, has her hooks into him. So I am dreading the Cavs' attempt to repeat for a championship now that he is involved with the Kardashian family. That can't end well.
Oh, yeah. I love that phrase.
I don't know.
I love that phrase and try to use it often. That's not going to end well.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, man. That's what, you know, for a guy who works hard on the glass, as they always say, that could take on any number of unfortunate connotations now that he's in there with the Kardashian family, ones that I probably don't want to think about, nor anybody else. So,
the Chris Humphrey story, the media painted him like you know, I remember, I think it was Wendy Williams, one of the talk show hosts, you know, commented about him, like, you know, he looks special. Yeah.
Well, seeing Tristan Thompson turn into the next Chris Humphreys is something I'm not looking forward to.
So it never leads to good publicity. I think it's, and this is just in general, but my feeling of thought is, if you have nothing to start with, okay, if you don't have a platform, if you have nothing to start with, it's great to get involved with a celebrity, even a questionable celebrity, or a celebrity that is very polarizing, gets a lot of positive things and gets a lot of negative things. If you have, and I think this also equates to whether or not you should be on a reality show. If you have something to lose, if you've already established something and you are something already in your career, a lot of times getting involved with someone else, especially a media person who's more famous for being in the tabloids than having any specific talent, is generally going to degrade you in some way. It's going to lessen you in some way. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with her or anything, but I already think a little differently about Tom Hiddleston from the Taylor Swift Tom Hiddleston thing. I mean, I looked at him as like a really, really strong actor. And I mean, with the Avengers and Loki and stuff like that, he's like a cult hero with a lot of superhero fans and people that go to Comic-Con and stuff like that. Plus, he also has great acting chops, and he's looked on very, very favorably by the highbrow acting community. and then his relationship with Taylor Swift on Instagram and stuff like that, and when he's wearing like I'm with Taylor shirt or whatever, I'm like, oh God.
Oh yeah, yeah, I hear you. I mean, you get into stuff like what appeared to be his transparent attempts to make her jealous last night, canoodling with this other chickie at one of the post shows. So I hear you on that. It's always unfortunate whenever any of these people kind of take that turn. And I look at Tristan Thompson, you know, whose game is often compared to Dennis Rodman, vis-a-vis not a lot of offense, but hardworking, a genius at getting rebounds. I look at that and go, it doesn't mean you have to turn into Dennis Rodman in every facet of your life, my man. You know, how about you just emulate him on the court, you know, and leave the off-court stuff to somebody else. You know, it's disappointing when it goes that way, John.
Well, when a player on one of your favorite teams gets mixed up with a media personality, you know that person's going to be raked through the coals.
Yeah, well, he took a little bit of local heat last summer over – it wasn't exactly a holdout, but as a restricted free agent, not signing that contract all the way up till about training camp, whatever minimal amount of local heat he got is going to pale in comparison to being a national figure now, and I shudder to think. But back at the Emmys here, in terms of anything on stage,
okay,
you're looking at, again, the juggernauts of our age, Veep, Game of Thrones, really kind of getting over in there with more of the awards. What were the main things that grabbed you inside the award ceremony last night?
Game of Thrones becoming the most awarded Emmy, becoming the most awarded TV series ever, I think, with 38 now Emmys, which is unbelievable. Julia Louis-Dreyfus capturing 5 in a row for Best Actress with Veep. Her speech was awesome also. I think that it basically covered the gamut from comedy to eulogy. She gave a very, very, very touching end of her speech to her dad, who just died on Friday, which was shocking. And it's funny because the internet, I mean, that's not funny. That's very sad. But, I mean, the internet started like, you know, mourning Richard Dreyfuss, who's obviously not her father. She said in the speech, it's William.
He
I think he tweeted out something like, thank you for all the love and support, Twitter, but I'm not dead and I'm not related to, I'm not Julia Louis Dreyfus's dad. But anyway, so she gave a very, and I think what she said, you know, especially about her dad, so glad that he liked Veep because his is the only opinion that matters. That's so true. With Hollywood, because you get so many negatives from so many people, that I think one thing that's a key to her success is the fact that she goes by the opinions of only people that matter, and the fact that her dad was that person, that's really good. I always say there are many keys to success, but one of the keys to failure is trying to please everyone. So trying to listen to everyone's opinion is a definite path down the road to failure. But the other thing that she did that was awesome, which was hysterical, was when she said she blamed herself. She personally apologized for the current political situation. She said that Veep sort of tore down the walls between comedy and politics. But now in the current state, her show started out as political satire, but now it feels more like a sobering documentary. So she promises that she's going to rebuild the wall and make Mexico pay for it. That was hysterical. And that was exceedingly well-written and exceedingly well-delivered. That was very, very funny.
Well, it's funny because I don't have HBO, but I did just recently see the guy who's the showrunner on that show also created, I think, The Thick of It in England, which you can binge watch as I did on Hulu. And so I've seen more or less like the British equivalent of that show. And it's that guy's got a great mind for kind of turning current events and everything like that on its ear. And, you know, Veep, from everything I've ever heard, is a very, very funny show, and I look forward to checking it out some point here. But John, again, it's always a true pleasure to have you on the program. Very grateful for your time and your wit and insight in breaking this all down. And again, I am hopeful that our listeners are going to go check out johnbaistow.net. Check out your stuff there at johnbaistow on Twitter. fitnessmadesimple.com, the granddaddy of all of your brands right there. Fitness, pop culture, whatever it is, you can't go wrong with that stuff with my man John Baistow. A true pleasure as always, John. Thank you so much.
I love you, Rick. It's hysterical. Whenever you say that, the fitness and pop culture, it's like two things that have nothing to do with each other. But yeah, two of my interests, trying to prove that you can do more than one thing in this life.
It's not as random as some possibilities, you know, like a man who's an expert at coal mining and kickball, you know, I mean, there are things that are more random probably. But,
whatever.
You know.
bottom line is people in this world try to pigeonhole you that once you become famous for one thing or known because of one thing, or you start doing one thing and that's your job, that's all you can do. And it's so hard to break out of that box. But I just always said, you've got to follow your joy. And even if you enjoy two totally different things, you've got to push and try to become relevant in both of those, and screw people that are saying anything different. And basically just go for your goals, believe in yourself, work hard, do something every day to try to accomplish your goal, and you will be successful.
You got to do that. You're an inspiration to me, John. I have a lot of interests and fingers in a lot of pies. Again, to all of us that are striving to be good in different areas here, again, you are a perfect example of thriving in different areas. Appreciate your time as always, and already can't wait for the next time we do this on the show.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you so much, John. Appreciate your time. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FBH Lounge Mini Episode number 759.
At Honda, we like thinking. We think about every last little detail. Take our Civic 1.4 Sport, from its rear parking camera with multi-angle view to its dusk-sensing lights that turn on as daylight fades. Nothing gets missed. We even think about your bank balance, which is why we have a 0% finance offer on our Civic 1.4 Sport. So head down to your local Honda dealer to book a test drive. Selected dealers registered by 30th of September 2016 while stocks last. 0% APR representative terms and conditions at honda.co.uk.